In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose. As long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we have a whole bunch to unpack about the Chicago Bears and the NFL draft. We've got crazy turn of events with Chicago baseball, and I don't know what else we'll get into, but we'll get into more. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You could see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. The playoffs are going on right now, so head on over to icehogs.com. Get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, playoff tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, how are you doing, my friend?
Well, I can't complain. The weather is better. We got through the NFL draft, and I feel like for the time being, the epic civil war of Chicago Bears fandom is over for the time being. I'm sure there'll be reasons for it to come back, but for now,
we've got a mini battle going on, which we'll get to about the fourth round pick.
Well, I mean that's
but you know it's way calmer than it has been.
Yeah, I mean, considering how a few months ago we were counting down to this because we wanted to know Caleb Williams or Justin Fields. And then when we got that answer, we wanted to know, okay, what's going to go on with the ninth overall pick? And then, you know, I got to say, I think that the stars really aligned again for the Bears. And now we see how this translates.
Yeah, so I went to C2E2 here in Chicago, the comic book convention. And so Friday morning, I'm like, you know what? Nothing is going to bring me down from my Bears happiness. So I roll in with, I have this hoodie that looks like it's got a jersey over a gray sweatshirt. It's a Urlacher that I've had for years and years since he was still playing. And I put that on and I have the Bears socks and I got for Christmas a few years ago, a pair of Nike Bears shoes. So I went full on Bears out. You could not bring down my high.
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that because on Friday after work, I was going to go to I usually go to my friend's house Friday night. We play games. And before that, I had to stop and run some errands. So I went to the local mall, Yorktown, over in Lombard. And when I was there, I saw people everywhere were decked out in Bears stuff. And listen, you always see people wearing Bears stuff in Chicago, but the day after that first round, after the historic first round, there were people just decked out everywhere in Bears stuff. And you saw the footage of people in bars and restaurants when these picks were made. And you saw the reaction of people during that first round, during the first pick and the ninth pick. I mean, obviously, we knew what was going to happen with the first pick, but there's still that feeling of, okay, it's finally off our chest. And I do have to find it funny. I got texts from several friends, like maybe three or four of them, saying, why is this taking so long with the first pick? Because we all should know who the Bears were taking. And I said, don't worry, it'll be Caleb Williams. And then we see the video of Ryan Poles talking to Caleb Williams on the phone. And Poles was like, yeah, we're going to let this wind down to the 5-minute mark. So it was intentionally done. There were no decisions or evaluations being made. Caleb was their guy. He knew it. The Bears knew it. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Well, apparently the NFL told the Bears to wait 5 minutes.
Which isn't surprising.
No, I mean, it adds to the drama. And honestly, it was a kind of, for a first round that didn't have very many trades, it was a pretty wild first round.
Well, you know, the top 10, I felt, went pretty as predicted, except for one that made a big difference. And yes, you probably know what I'm referring to.
I do. Like it, the first seven picks just went pretty much like clockwork, like I think most of us expected.
Yeah. And then Atlanta.
Atlanta comes up. And, you know, when it got to Atlanta, I was feeling pretty good. So I was like, all right, you know, I was in. So there was several camps of Bears fans. There was the trade up for Marvin Harrison camp. There was the trade back for more picks camp. The Byron Murphy camp, the defensive end camp, and the Roma Dunze camp. And I was in the Malik Nabers / Roma Dunze, whichever one is their camp.
As was I.
And that's, I wanted to stay at 9 and draft one of those two dudes and then evaluate if they're not there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't think they're going to be there. It's really, we need the Los Angeles Chargers. We need Los Angeles to pick an offensive lineman, and we need Atlanta to pick, I assumed would be a defensive player. And I'm like, once they got to Atlanta, Roma Dunze's on there. I'm like, I don't think they're taking Roma Dunze. I'm like, they're going to go the first cornerback or the first edge rusher. And then when we got to a certain point, I was like, I actually told my wife, I was like, watch, it's going to be Michael Penix. I'm like, shock us all. And boom, Michael Penix. My wife was watching. I got the first like 21 picks right.
Nice going.
I mean,
nice
not,
going.
I would never in a million years would have, you know, sat before the draft, but as the picks were on the clock, I, you know, watched the board and I was like, and then the last end of the first round, I got, you know, a few wrong, but I was like churning them out.
Well, I mean,
24 right. Some, I got the first 20 something right.
I mean, that's really good. That's really, really freaking good. And looking at that pick by Atlanta, that to me was the stars aligning, because I know you didn't think they'd pick Roma Dunze, but wouldn't you think logic could say, hey, we just brought in Kirk Cousins, so why not give him another weapon, right?
No, I never thought that. If he was going to go in that pick before, my concern was they would go, you know what, we're going to go edge rusher. We can trade back and get one of the edge rushers. And they trade with the Jets or somebody that would take him. And when it got to a certain point on the clock, I was like, no, they're not going to trade. This is taking too long. They're going to make that pick. And I'm like, no, they're going to go Michael Penix. Watch. And, you know, it's wild, but when they say the logic, I sort of get it. They know Kirk Cousins is coming off of a serious injury. Who knows if he's going to be ready for the start of the season, how he's going to handle the Achilles tear. And he's like, what, 38, 39 years old. So he's on the end of his, you know, football life. So, and the thinking is if, hey, with Kirk, we expect to be good. We're not going to be able to pick top tier quarterback. So let's get him, let him sit and learn and watch a true professional. But where I don't understand is why Michael Penix? He's like the oldest quarterback in the draft.
Yeah, you're going to have him sit a few years and he's already going to be what, in his upper 20s?
I mean, I think he's like 26 now, and he's going to be sitting for at least 2 years.
So, okay. But you know, to your logic, yes, there is some uncertainty with Kirk Cousins, but if you had that much uncertainty about Kirk Cousins, why'd you give him all that money? And if you wanted some insurance, why not maybe bring in a veteran or something? I mean, shouldn't you be maximizing now with what's around your quarterback?
Honestly, if I'm going to do that, and draft a quarterback, I'm probably trading back, letting somebody trade up for one of those players. I'm trading back and then taking, in the assumption is you're going to have one of them if you trade back to 12, 13, 14, trade back and get a younger quarterback, one that maybe you need a little more seasoning for. And honestly, I think, you know, if they would have drafted a Spencer Rattler in what he go in the fifth round, sixth round?
Right. Yeah.
Like, I think Spencer Rattler is a talented guy, but he just needs, like, that's a guy that, all right, you're not going to piss Kirk Cousins off. He gets it. You're drafting a guy there's no threat. But now Kirk is going to come in and go, man, I've got this guy breathing down my neck. Arguably, I mean, Michael Penix is arguably the most pro-ready quarterback. And so you pick a guy that's pro ready, he can step in, and now he's breathing down your neck when you're coming off a major injury and you're old by NFL standards. Like, that's, you know, he clearly wasn't happy. And the hope is he doesn't take it out on Michael Penix, because Michael Penix had nothing to do with it.
Right. Right. But you know what? It opened the door right to the Bears for Roma Dunze.
Yeah, so I read somewhere, and I heard somebody talk about it, that there was mathematical simulations of the draft, and Roma Dunze was there for the Bears like 40% of the time. And listening to Ryan Poles talk later, he said that in their mocks that they did as a Bear staff, he was there about half of the time. And apparently he was Roma Dunze all along, because Ryan Poles wanted to trade up for him. And Ian Cunningham stopped him. It's like, no, just let this play out. Let this play out. So I think the Bears would have been trading some significant.
Ryan Pace would have traded up.
Oh, Ryan Pace would have traded up to first. I'll give you three first rounders.
We're going to collaborate.
Are you going to take Caleb Williams? No, we're trading up for Roma Dunze.
You already have the first pick. Yeah, we're trading up to second to get a Dunze. Wouldn't you take Marvin Harrison Jr.? A Dunze? I mean, okay, listen. We all know that Marvin Harrison Jr. was the number one wide receiver, and in an ideal world, he would have been there for our taking, but we knew that wasn't going to happen, and the chances for Malik Nabers were incredibly slim, and there's a lot of upside with Roma Dunze, and you already saw that Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze were kind of building up a rapport, so this feels like a match made in heaven. This was one of those things where, okay, you waited it out to nine, the opening was there, there was no way you could pass up on this, in my opinion. I mean, you could have done some mental gymnastics and still decided to trade back, saying, oh, Roma Dunze, he's attractive, he could get us more picks. But Ryan Poles said, no, he's going to make us better. We want to make our offense better as best as we can. So we're going to take him. I love the fact the Bears didn't overthink there, because I think there is a very, very, very likely scenario that Bears teams of the past would have been doing overthinking in that spot.
I'm going to disagree with you on one point. I'm not certain Marvin Harrison Jr. was the number one wide receiver in the class. I think it was Malik Nabers.
Well, okay. I'm not saying I disagree with you, but that's how the draft board fell.
Yes. I think a lot of teams had Marvin Harrison, and I think Marvin Harrison might be the safer of, so it's between Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison as who's the most talented. I think Marvin Harrison's probably the safer pick. And if you're a general manager drafting that early, I think it's the safer pick for your job, because if you draft Marvin Harrison Jr. and he fails, it's like drafting Caleb Williams. you know, some people are like, I would have drafted Jaden Daniels first, like a
Right,
ding
this
dong.
isn't 2017 with Mahomes and Trubisky and Watson and all that.
It's, you know, it's if you draft the Jaden Daniels first overall and he doesn't pan out, you're the guy that drafted the guy that busted or that didn't pan out, and you passed on the consensus guy. That's like a double whammy. So if Marvin Harrison Jr. doesn't pan out and you're, you know, the Cardinals, and you go, every 100, you know, 99 out of 100 people are picking that same pick. It just didn't work out. You know, it's, you don't fault them because you're like, that was the right pick at the time. If you pick a Malik Nabers over him, Malik Nabers needs to pan out, or you know, are doing yourself a disservice.
Exactly. There's kind of that added pressure that Marvin Harrison has to be the star here. I mean, I think he will be, you know, as long as he stays healthy, I think he'll be very good, obviously, in Arizona. But I mean, you know, either way, you're looking at a guy from a GM perspective, like, okay, he was projected to be the first wide receiver. The logic was there to take him. Where, you know, obviously with Roma Dunze, is the perception on that is, hey, this is a guy that's legit, and there is a lot of upside here. The fact that he fell to you, you could have gotten a steal. You weren't in a position to take him over Marvin Harrison or Malik Nabers, but you had him fall to you. So if he's good or great, it makes you look even better.
Yeah, so the draft board played out, and, you know, in this draft, you had two options at that 9 pick. I mean, you know, there are more, but I really, you're in the two kind of buckets. Is you could have drafted a defensive player and gone and said, hey, this is a deep wide receiver draft. We'll get a wide receiver later. There's not a lot of pass rushers that we feel good about. So you could go that route. Or the route is, hey, there's a lot of wide receivers, but after those top three, they all become this guy could be good if guys. Like, I think most people agree that Nabers, Harrison, and Ndunze are going to be good. Like, there's not flaws in their game. Like, they will all work.
They're not projects.
They're not projects. They're not like, you know, like, oh, this guy, if he can run crisper routes, he'll be good. Or this guy's a beast. He just drops the ball a lot. Or, you know, this guy, he's good. He just doesn't have, he runs a 4.7 or 4.65. You're like, they all have a, this guy is good except for this one flaw. And you're like, okay, well then that adds an element of uncertainty to the pick that you make.
Right, exactly.
So you go, all right, if one of the top three wide receivers is there, you take him and then you figure out everything later. And that's the way the Bears did. Roma Dunze fell to number 9 and they went, you know what? He's the best guy on our board. It is a, you know, I know some people are like, oh, that's position of strength because you have Keenan Allen and DJ Moore, but you only have Keenan Allen under contract for 1 year. And the minute one of those two guys gets injured, it becomes Scott time or Velus Jr. time. And suddenly that stops being a position of strength and immediately becomes a position of weakness.
Right. I mean, and, you know, think about this too. I think that DJ Moore, they're going to try to lock him up for long term. I really do. I don't think as much with Keenan Allen. That might just be a 1 year thing. And if you do bring him back, it probably wouldn't be more than another year. So he's pretty short term in the grand scheme of things. And if you didn't have anybody guaranteed past next year, I mean, it's not like you're going to have nothing next year or the year after, but you would have to figure that out. That would require more maneuvering. So, and this gives you a wide receiver to build a rapport in the NFL with your quarterback right off the bat. They're both coming into the league at the same time. They seem to really be hype about each other. You saw Caleb Williams and his reaction to when they drafted him 9th overall. He was, you know, clearly pumped up. So there's already that chemistry between the two, and we just got out of the draft. So this all really works out. And you know what? Hey, focus on offense. I wasn't going to say everything was a complete bust if they went, you know, an edge rusher or defensive player, but I love the fact that they're like, you know what? We're going to make this offense as good as possible. Because that's something the Bears have never done in their 100 years of existence.
Right. So then the next pick they had, so if we went from 9 all the way to 75. And that one was interesting. And, you know, you listen to polls talk about it later, and there was the debate there is, do they go best player available? Or do they go a position of need? And they decided to go best player available. And for them, it was Karan Amageji, the offensive tackle from Yale.
The local kid.
Yep, from Hinsdale. And he's a diehard Bears fan. You go back and look at his Twitter account.
Oh, they're great. Didn't he say, like, get rid of the entire offensive line back in 2020?
He did. You know, we'll talk more about this, but we'll get to the actual picks there. And but they go Karan Amageji, local kid, Bears fan, was 75. And then they get to 122. And you're like, okay, they're going to just stick with their picks. And they go Torrey Taylor, the punter from Iowa, who I've heard the nickname now, Legatron, and I love it. And people are mad. People are big mad. I just don't see it. I mean, I honestly think on Wednesday tweeted out my final mock draft, and I had for that 122 pick. I was like, I think it's going to be one of these four guys, and Torrey Taylor was one of them.
Well, you know, he's an Aussie, right?
Yep.
And you know what the nickname I heard was?
What?
Crocodile punter.
I love it.
That's what I'm calling him from now on. You know, he's one of the best punters in the country. He's got just like a vibranium leg. And I do want to remind some people that the Bears punting was not good last year.
It was awful. It was abysmal.
And listen, hopefully to Caleb Williams' point, we don't have to rely on much punting, you know, with him as quarterback in this new offense, but you still need a good punter. You could be the in-prime Patriots with Tom Brady, or the in-prime Saints with Drew Brees, or, you know, the Packers with Brett Favre, whatever. You want to have a good punter, because guess what? You're not going to score every single time, and it matters when you have to flip the field. I mean, you know, if you get stopped and it's a tire close game and you got to pin the other team deep, or if you're ahead and you're in the final minutes and the ability to pin them deep and make them drive down the field for a go-ahead score, that stuff matters. That stuff really matters. So I'm more than okay with bringing in a legit great punter, because they do matter. Special yeah. teams do matter.
It is, think about is what's going to be a friend to a young quarterback that you're throwing into a starting role day one is having, if when you don't score, being able to pin them back, have your defense come out, and then you win the field position battle. And so, you know, I'm totally fine with it, because at the time you were like, that was your last pick, you know. And if you look, is most of the big mock guys had Torrey Taylor going anywhere from mid fourth to mid fifth, and they had a late fourth because it was the Eagles pick, so it was a late fourth. So you were right in the middle of that range that you expected him to go. So I, you know, that, and you didn't have any later picks. Like, you know, if they had fifth, sixth, seventh, maybe you package fifth and a sixth to move up in early in the fifth and do it that way. But it was your last pick. So you take that. And then they surprised everybody. They traded back up into the fifth to take Austin Booker, the pass rusher from Kansas.
I like that move very much.
Yeah. It's, you know, I want to dive into each of the draft picks a little more, but I'm okay with it. You gave up more than I guess I wanted to, because essentially you gave up next year's fourth. So, and when you add up the total, because it was the pick that you traded for Ryan Bates. So essentially you traded Ryan Bates for a 2025 fourth rounder.
Yeah.
Which, you know, not ideal, but, you got potentially a steal. Caleb Williams, you know, I think we all know he's got insane escapability, big plays galore, a big arm. And it's an interesting big arm, because there's a lot of guys that have like, oh, they can make all the throws. And you've heard that saying, make all the throws, and guys have big arms. But watch when they show those big arms, they drop back and they heave. Watch Caleb Williams do it. It's just an arm fling.
He makes it look effortless.
I'll get this a little more, but the two guys that, you know, that I give him comparisons to, are Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. And both of those guys, they can just fling it that without major effort. And that's the big part is, you know, oh yeah, if you can get a clean pocket and heave it, yeah, you could throw it down the field 70 yards. He's doing it on the run, rolling left, just flicks the arm and boom, 50 yard pass. Like, how the hell did he do that? You know, he's going to need to be a little more harnessed, and you know, you don't want to. What I'm scared about with Caleb Williams is they're going to do what they did to Justin Fields. And, you know, Ryan Poles can say, oh, all these quarterback issues were in the past. They weren't all in the past. One is partially under your watch. You know, you didn't draft Justin Fields, and you didn't, you know, put those mistakes, or, you know, those, you didn't put, you know, throw him under the bus that first year, like Nagy and Poles or Pace did, but you tried to make him somebody he's not, and you didn't play to his strengths, and you didn't build up around him. And regardless of what Justin Fields is going to be, you did not aid in that process. So yeah, it's not all historical. It's not like, oh yeah, that was under Dick Geron, we couldn't develop. No, there is one that has Ryan Poles' fingerprints on it. So they can't, they've already started to build around him. That's a good start. But when they're trying to get him to be the best he can, you can't break him of who he is. You've gotta build around it. So, you know, don't try to make him stop making those big plays, but sometimes, you know, work with him to be like, hey, you know, I know you're looking for the big play. Take what's there. This is the NFL. It's not college. Take what the defense gives you. So if you're rolling out and you're looking for that deep play, if it's not there within, you know, that internal clock, X number of seconds in your head, dump it off. Dump it off to DeAndre Swift. Dump it off to Cole Kmet. Or scramble. Take those 7 yards and run out of bounds. Those are things where you're letting him be him. You're just making it a little more self-contained in the NFL realm.
I fully agree. And I do feel like they are going to play to his strengths better, because I think he has the attributes that Ryan Poles was looking for that Justin Fields just didn't always have. And, you know, early on, before I watched too much Caleb Williams, you know, I might have said, oh, well, he's got similar problems to Justin Fields, and he has similar things to Justin Fields. And, You know, obviously both Justin Fields and Caleb Williams can escape, but it's not the same because Justin Fields can take off with that explosive energy and run. Caleb Williams isn't like the same type of runner, to be fair, than Justin Fields was, but it's that nimbleness and awareness and athleticism that Caleb Williams has that helps him escape and makes, you know, something out of nothing. It may feel like the same at times, but you watch the tape and it's not. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. But there's enough similarities between the two that I just want to make sure that the Bears are going to accept Caleb Williams for who he is and help him be a great NFL quarterback.
I agree.
And not try to change him too much, because you had, you know, two essential offensive coordinators. I mean, Matt Nagy was a head coach, but he was also basically the play caller. So between Getsy and Nagy, they were one trick ponies. They needed a quarterback that fit their mold. There had to be the guy who did X. And if the quarterback doesn't do X, then they don't know how to run their offense. And so why the heck did you pick up a quarterback that's not X if you only can do things with X? Like, that's always boggled my mind. And, you know, if you're Ryan Poles, why did you pick an offensive coordinator that's only able to do X when you've got a Y quarterback? Like, it doesn't make sense. And I think Shane Waldron is a much more experienced offensive coordinator than Getsy and Nagy combined, to be honest.
Yeah. Was this part of a whole vision? Like, honestly, I'm not saying like sabotage set up for failure, but was looking ahead for Ryan Poles when he took this job and evaluate and try to rebuild, was this kind of the plan all along, to get his own quarterback and his own offense the way he wants it, and in the meantime try to bridge something to see if you can get something that maybe you didn't expect? Like, is it fair to ask that question?
I would say you're correct, but I would probably not put any sort of like negative or diabolical motive.
No. And that's not what I'm trying to do.
But I just for connotation, not saying you do, but I would say, yeah, he's, you know, hey, this is ultimately where we want to go. And if Justin Fields is the dude, great. If he's not, that's not my problem. I didn't draft him.
Right.
Maybe that went into it. And that's why you maybe stopped running him, because you're like, okay, well, that's buoying our offense with his big play ability. We want to see what he can do in a controlled offense, and if he's got growth, and if he can do what we want to do. And in the process, you realize that Luke Getsy is a terrible offensive coordinator. And I know Hub Arkish will tell you that Luke Getsy is a great offensive coordinator, because obviously he is, because he got another job. But he got a job with a terrible organization. And he's like, it's Justin Fields' fault. Like, okay, Justin Fields had a lot of flaws last year, but Luke Getsy was terrible.
You know, I think to your point, like, that you've made earlier on this show and other episodes, I think Luke Getsy knows an offense incredibly well, but when you go off script, that's where he struggles with offensive play calling. And especially if, I mean, combine the fact that you were trying to make a quarterback into something he wasn't, combined with the fact that going off script and doing these nonsensical screens and that mumbo jumbo really made for struggles here. And it was ugly at times.
Is like Luke Getsy, when you drew up a pre-planned 15 play sequence, like, it went well because you practiced it, everything worked. And the minute though something didn't work, like he just got flustered and he didn't know what to do.
Right, exactly.
It's like playing Madden when you don't know all the playbook and you're just like, I know this play. I'm gonna run this play because I know what it is. Even if it's not working, I run this play because I know how, you know, I know what it is. And it's he couldn't improvise. And maybe he improves at some point, but he was bad for the Bears. And regardless of what Justin Fields did or didn't do, is it didn't change the fact that Luke Getsy wasn't good at his job. And I actually texted at the 670 text line yesterday when Hub was on with Anthony Heron. And because he was like, well, you know, the fans think they know more and the fans wanted Getsy out. And I just texted. I was like, Hub, I was like, the fans didn't fire Luke Getsy. Luke Getsy's boss.
Exactly. Ryan Poles fired him.
So if you think Ryan Poles is doing a good job and Ryan Poles looked at the play calling and said, this guy is not our offensive coordinator, fired him after one season, that should tell you something. So regardless of what fans thought, I mean, fans just happened to agree with what Ryan Poles did.
Right. That's,
you know, just because we're fans and we're not professional here is sometimes we're right. And that was a case that the football man agreed with it.
But, right. You can't say that the fans are wrong if the guy you trust agreed with us.
Yeah. You know, so a lot of us wanted Eberflus to be fired too. And the football guy didn't agree with that. You know, so.
And I still don't agree with that, but maybe they'll prove me wrong.
We'll see. But Caleb Williams, these are some of the negatives or the weaknesses that people have talked about. Ball security. Can he play outside of a Lincoln Riley system? Can he play within a system and not go hero ball? Can he make those anticipatory throws? And his throws need to be quicker. Okay. And also he is 6'1", 214 with a 9 3/4 hand grip or a hand, and ran a 4.57 40, not official because he didn't run it at the combine or the pro day, but the scouts are saying that that's what he clocked at is 4.57, unofficial. So I'm going to read you Aaron Rodgers coming out. Aaron Rodgers partially fell because can he win outside of a Jeff Tedford system? Jeff Tedford at Cal had made Kyle Bowler one of the best college quarterbacks, drafted high, failed in the NFL. And so he's a quarterback whisperer in college. Aaron Rodgers, can he win outside the Jeff Tedford system? They had worries about his height and size. He's 6'2", 223, so inch taller and 9 pounds heavier. He has ball security issues. He needs a quicker release. Patrick Mahomes, can he win outside of the air raid system? Can he play inside an NFL system and not try to play hero ball and big game hunt? And he needs to improve his anticipatory throws and be quicker on his release. I pulled up actual scouts reports on all three of those. Sound very familiar, don't they?
They do. Can't every single scout on the planet Earth ask the question, can they play outside blank system they've played in the NFL?
You know, it's in previous years, there's been certain coaches that run a more pro style offense. Like Jim Harbaugh run for a guy. I mean, he doesn't throw a lot. He runs the ball a lot, but he runs a pro style offense. So I think some of the comfort with JJ McCarthy is, even though he didn't throw a lot, he's coming from a pro style system. So it should translate better. But the issue is over the last several years, the college or the NFL world has started taking things from college. They're like, because it's so hard to translate a quarterback from college to the pros, they're like, let's take elements from college and put those in. And you find you're having better success with quarterbacks because it's an easier transition. It's still an imperfect science, but so But, you know, getting Patrick Mahomes was 6'2", 225, so almost identical to Aaron Rodgers. He had 9.25-inch hands, so smaller hands than Caleb Williams. He ran a 4.8 40. Aaron Rodgers ran a 4.75. So he's fairly significantly faster than those two. But very similar styles, very similar criticisms, and those two have won Super Bowls. One Super Bowls, one Super Bowl. Both are going to be in the Hall of Fame. So I like those comparisons better than Lance Zierlein from NFL.com said Kyler Murray. I don't see that as much with Caleb. And I think, you know, the biggest criticism with Kyler Murray and why he hasn't been as successful is that guy doesn't work hard. You know, they had to put a clause in his contract that he can't play Call of Duty. Like
Yeah, right.
Caleb Williams is a hard worker. So,
Yeah, we know that.
And now we're already seeing, like, and then there was the, oh, he doesn't want to be here and he doesn't want to play for Chicago. We are seeing the personality shine. My wife is an Eagles fan. She sat there with the draft and she's like, I love this guy. I'm a fan of this guy. And, you know, the crowd, the handful of people in the, you know, Bears fans at the draft on Thursday night that were in the front row, you know, Bear Man and the other guys. He took a selfie with him, gets a selfie stick out, takes a selfie with him. He's already buddy buddy with Roma Dunze, and he snuck up and joined his Zoom interview and, you know, did the bear claw, the grr. And
You see him tweeting about the fans buying the jerseys.
He already tweeted the punter, you're not going to have a lot to do, or texted him. Like he's already winning us over. And, you know, like I'm a Justin Fields fan, and I'm going to root for him as long as he's not playing the Bears with the Steelers or whoever team he's playing for, because I think Ryan or Justin Fields is a good kid and kind of got done dirty by the Bears. I am firmly entrenched in the Caleb Williams camp now.
Yeah, I feel you. And you know what? I'm going to give this to Caleb Williams too, is he, like I've said in the past, just leaks confidence everywhere. And I feel like that's contagious in a good way. Now, there's something else I really want to point out. You watched the video of him getting drafted, right? Like Ryan Poles making the call, then he talked to Eberflus and Kevin Warren. You saw that, right? Now, words only mean so much. Okay. Actions are all that truly matter. But you hear Caleb Williams talking about winning. And I believe, was it Kevin Warren? Somebody said, are you ready to win us championships? You remember, you know what I'm referencing, right? This may seem irrelevant, small, whatever you want to say, but like, they're setting the bar at championships, and that's what we want. Do you remember 4 years ago when you and I sat there and listened and then went on a show and ranted about Ted Phillips and George McCaskey retaining everything because they went 8-8, backed their butts into the playoffs, and got killed? You remember when Ted Phillips, did we get the quarterback right? No. Did we win enough games? No. It's not fine, but it's fine. Like that was the bar they were setting. And that bar was mediocrity. And listen, I could go on a whole tangent about Matt Eberflus because I still kind of wish we had a new coach. But I'm going to give him one more chance. And I'm going to say is between Ryan Poles and Caleb Williams and what Kevin Warren said on the phone, I can actually sit here and feel like the bar is championships, because I think an organization only goes so far as to where they set the bar. And a few years ago, Ted Phillips and George McCaskey came out and told you that their bar was not championship level, that it was mediocrity and being just good enough. Will it translate? I don't know. Does this mean much? I don't know. But to me, it speaks something.
And in the Eberflus thing is, you know, we haven't seen this new season come up of what he's going to be like. But there's been a change in him between when we saw him end the season and when we started seeing him around the combine and these pro days and things. And it seems like he's more comfortable in who he is. He grew the beard and he's got a new outfit, got a new hairdo, and he seems less stiff, more confident in who he is. And players love him.
You know, I do see a more polished man. I don't disagree with you. Frankly, I see him and I think of him as a completely different person.
Yeah, so will that translate to him being a head coach on Sundays during the regular season? I don't know, but the culture is different.
Well, and you know what?
Seems different.
Yeah, and you know what? There's more certainty now. Because, okay, I can't believe I'm going to do this, but I'm going to put down a few defenses of Eberflus. Last year was a lame duck year with your quarterback, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even though you didn't go into the season hoping for that, you know, you couldn't help but wonder, did it feel lame duck to him regarding the offensive coordinator, too?
I mean, that had to be, you know, very front of their minds, both him and Poles.
I mean, he was, and his first year as a coach, they were tanking. They stripped everything down and were bottoming out. And last year was his first kind of real go at trying to win games. So, again, I would have liked a better chance at a better head coach. I still don't know if Matt Eberflus is going to be a great one. But I'll give him one more chance. I mean, my main concern is, can he outcoach and match with the big boys? Because he hasn't come close to beating Matt LaFleur. He's gotten spanked by Andy Reid. He did beat Bill Belichick 2 years ago. I'll give him that. But, you know, that team was clearly on the downside. I mean, he can clearly beat, you know, Arthur Smith and the mess that they had in Carolina with, what's his face? The coach they fired,
yeah.
Frank Reich. You know, you can beat the bottom feeders. Can you just compete with the big dogs?
I mean, is he ever going to be a Matt LaFleur or Andy Reid? No. Is he ever going to be a Bill Belichick? No. But I think he could be a Dan Campbell. And Dan Campbell, is that guy going to outmaneuver you? No. But is he going to have his team ready to fight and play hard and be ready? I think that is obtainable.
Sure.
And you need, when to be a Dan Campbell, though, you need that offensive coordinator that, you know, you can rely on to put the X's and O's and be able to call those plays. But your Dan Campbell is a head coach. He's not a coordinator. He is a head coach, and he sets the tone for that team. And I think, maybe not to that, the same, I guess, like level of Dan Campbell, of like, you know, bite their kneecaps, but that same change the culture and everybody follows you, you know, to the end. They're behind you 100% and they're ride or die with you. I think Flus can be that. Will he? I don't know. But could he? I think that's obtainable.
Yeah, let's hope. I don't think that he's going to have problem, you know, rallying the troops. I think that, like you said, the players do like him. I think that him and Poles drafting Caleb Williams will help create a relationship. So, you know, there's reasons to be optimistic there, but we'll truly see how it all translates. Because you don't want to go through yet again drafting a quarterback and then having to bring in another coach. It happened with Justin Fields. It happened with Mitch Trubisky. You don't want to go through that again.
Fair. So Roma Dunze, let's get to him. 6'3", 212, ran a 4.45 40. So he's fast, but is he elite level fast? No. But so there's a website that compares the stats of like athleticism to, you know, historicals, all the other players at your position, or you can do it, you know, against anybody, all athletes or offensive players or defensive players, but just against wide receivers. Roma Dunze, he is in the 77th percentile in height. So he's very tall for a wide receiver. His 10-yard split of the 40. So his 40's not elite, but it's pretty good. His blank is just a standard 40 time is in the 75th percentile. So historically, pretty good. His 10-yard split is 76th percentile. His vertical, which is 39 inches, is in the 85th percentile. His 20-yard shuttle is in the 91st percentile. I hope everybody can remember when Allen Robinson was really good. The end of his tenure with the Jags and early in his tenure in the Bears, very, very good. Roma Dunze is a taller, faster, stronger Allen Robinson, which, you know, if Lance Zierlein from NFL.com said Larry Fitzgerald, the guy has insane body control and he has greater separation than Marvin Harrison Jr. His catch radius is ridiculous. He plays really strong. You can't jam that guy and throw him off. He's both physically and play strong. When you watch him on tape, I feel like he never hits that top level speed that he has. It's almost like he was playing for a 50-50 ball, knowing he was going to win the 50-50 ball. Some of that could have been Michael Penix. I'm not as high on Michael Penix as a lot of people, but he's A-plus character, like just an absolute good kid. And he was a team captain and he runs routes really well. And he is A-plus at high pointing the football. So this guy is a classic X receiver, but he is able to play slot if you want him to. And I see, you know, I know they're going to maneuver people around, but is Roma Dunze is your X, and Keenan Allen as your slot, and DJ Moore as your Z. And that where this is going to be huge is this is DJ Moore is not a big dude. And he was playing that X route or the X spot because he was able to win those one-on-one battles with cornerbacks. This is going to give more room for DJ Moore to operate. So yeah. Rome may not get all these stats, but it is an actual weapon and it is going to open doors for DJ Moore and Keenan Allen.
So you look at the weapons that Caleb Williams will have in year one, Roma Dunze, DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Cole Kmet, DeAndre Swift. Those are like your top dogs right there.
Gerald Everett.
Yeah, don't forget him. They brought him in.
He's that position that we hoped Robert Tonyan would be.
And
he's better, a lot better than Robert Tonyan.
Yeah, when you say Robert Tonyan, I still think of that dropped pass in Cleveland.
He's going to be the Robert Tonyan that played for the Packers before the injury.
Yeah, because Robert Tonyan with the Packers was a decent player, and we were hoping to get that, and then Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's exciting to add a guy like that. And he is going to having just consummate professionals and DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, and you're already an A-plus character, that he is going to be able to play, and he's going to be able to just learn how to be a professional from two absolute genuine character guys that are just great professionals and great people. It's a perfect landing spot. I love Malik Nabers as a playmaker. That guy reminds me so much of what's his name from the Dolphins? Why am I drawing a blank? Hill.
But yes, Tariq Hill.
Yeah, it's so much. But in the press conference, he already said his quarterback's name wrong. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
They were like, oh, he called him Janiel Dones.
So he was doing a Twitter bit unintentionally?
Yeah. I'm like, dude, this is like your introductory press conference. This is the quarterback that you're saddled with. Like, and you're already like clowning on him. Janiel Dones.
Yee. I did not see that. That's wow.
Yeah. So you and you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. All right, he doesn't do anything at the combine. Okay, I get it. You're the top dog. You don't feel you need to get it. But you don't work out at your pro day? And like just the attitude that he threw off. Like, it may not be intentional, but what I took away from him at the draft was he thought he was better than this. Like, he was too good for this. And then he's the only player that didn't sign the you know, agreement. So before you sign a contract, you sign this agreement that so they can start selling your jersey and things. He didn't sign it. So
no, he didn't.
You could not order a Marvin Harrison Jr. jersey from the NFL store. Can't do it.
So does that mean in the next Madden, John Dowd is going to be in his place?
Yeah, so I mean, that you might have something like that. I mean, people will make their own character of him, but like you know, that's, it's just a lot of little things that any one of them, you know, like, is this a red flag? But then you start putting them all together and you're like, I'm already happy with Roman Dunze. He just seems very, very nice, very genuine, very soft-spoken, already has a good rapport with our quarterback. He's excited to be here. And, you know, when he was at the draft, he was FaceTiming with his blind grandma, who listens to all his games because she can't see them. This guy, like, this is a guy you can root for.
Well, and you know, I think too that the match was there. Like, it's the right fit for the Bears, because, you know, we mentioned already kind of getting to know Caleb Williams, and I just think the way you described how Odunze fits in the system, it's the right fit. It's the right place, right fit for Odunze. And if Odunze is good and Caleb Williams is great, this draft, no matter what, is a success. The rest is gravy. And take a minute to think how we got here. How did we get Carolina's pick? Well, because we traded them our pick from the last draft, which was first overall. How did we get that pick? Because we bottomed out in 2022 and Davis Mills threw two miracle fourth down passes in week 18 to clinch that first overall pick for us. We don't get that first overall pick without that miracle. And we don't get that first overall pick with all those losses in 2022. And we understood what they were doing. Then we can look at last year. Okay, we were going to have the first pick this year because of the draft and because Carolina, they really effed up. They took in Bryce Young. Their owner made them do the trade, and they were so bad that they were the worst team in football. So that gave us the first overall pick.
Did you hear the David Tepper story?
I saw it. I saw the footage.
The restaurant that put
Yes.
So for those that don't know, it was a restaurant, right?
Yeah, it was like a restaurant or a cafe or something.
They had a marquee where, you know, you put the different letters up, and it just said, let the GM and the coach pick the player this time, please. David Tepper sees this and then went in and was like upset by it.
Like, just picture this cranky old boomer just with his pants up to his belly button storming into a restaurant. Hey, sonny, what do you have that up for? Rah. Yeah, that was, and what, didn't he also throw a drink at like a fan? Do you remember that too? Like at the end of the season?
He did. He dumped a beer on a fan.
This was all after he got fleeced by Ryan Poles.
Yeah.
And set their franchise back a number of years. And it's a humble reminder of how differently things could have gone. You know? And look at Roma Dunze. We got him ninth. Do you remember how mad we were last year when they blew those games to Denver, in Detroit, and in Cleveland? Remember? Like, that cost us the playoffs last year, but even if you would have gotten into the playoffs, how far would you would have gone? Those losses still hurt, but if Roma Dunze turns out great and this is a perennial contender and a Super Bowl winner eventually, we're going to look back at all 24 of the losses we've suffered the first 2 years of the Ryan Poles era, and we're going to look back and be like, that's how we built this.
Yep.
It's just crazy to think about.
So then we get Karan Amageji, 6'5", 323, and Lance Zierlein from NFL.com has him being like a future starter in the NFL. And the dude, when you compare him to all other offensive tackles, you know, since they've been measuring, he's 94th percentile in wingspan and 95th percentile in arm length. One of the biggest things that, you know, separates, are you going to be a tackle, a good tackle, or are you going to get moved to guard or be a bad tackle, is that arm length. Is Peter Skoronski. Remember the debate that year? Oh, he's going to be a tackle. No, he was going to be a guard. His arms are short. He's going to be a guard. And true enough, he's a guard. This dude has elite level length arms and elite wingspan. And he is athletic, super athletic. He's long. He's an explosive drive blocker. Like, you watch him. He's a powerful dude. He's just got power and a hard worker. And he loves this team and he hates the Packers. The thing he's got to work on is fundamentals and footwork. And honestly, those are things you can teach. Is you can't teach arm length. You can't teach power. Like, you can get stronger, but you can't. If you're a powerful dude, you're a powerful dude. So when we talked, people were like, oh, you know, you go after Joe Alt or Olu Fashanu because you upgrade your left tackle. This is your upgrade at left tackle. We're giving Braxton Jones this year, but if Braxton Jones doesn't become the guy we hope he will become, and this is not a knock on Braxton Jones. He's been pretty good, especially coming from, you know, a small school, but this year we need him to take that next level and also stay healthy. If he doesn't, they're not going to sign him to a big money extension. Is Karan Amageji is the guy that's waiting in the wings. He's going to wait in the wings. He's going to be on the roster this year. And at some point he's going to be a left tackle. They're going to make him into a left tackle. And so Braxton Jones, this is your competition here.
Yeah. It's nice to have that depth.
Torrey Taylor. He's our punter. He's 6'4", 223. He was the Ray Guy winner as the best punter in the nation, first team All-American. He broke the NCAA record for most punt yards in a season. The record was from 1938. He broke it. He's Aussie. He can do traditional punts with a good hang time, or he can do the Aussie style where he angles it and has like precision down and, you know, angles down. He can do either. You know, people are like, oh, I can't believe they drafted him fourth in the fourth round. We drafted Todd Sauerbrunn in the second. Todd Sauerbrunn was a pretty good punter. This guy is going to be worth it. And, you know, he is going to be an aid for your young quarterback. And I've heard people say, you're redrafting. You wasted two draft picks now on punters. Trenton Gill was picked like 255. He was a late second round pick. He was one of the last seventh round picks.
I was going to say he was almost at the end.
He was two from the end, I think. Three from the end. He was almost Mr. Irrelevant. That is a throwaway pick. At that point, even lasting with your team for a year, that's like 10% of seventh round picks. Of any seventh round pick, early or late, you know, lasts the whole season for the club that drafted him. So this guy beat that, and then becoming a decent starter from the seventh round, like 247 Sports, they said it's between 1% and 2% that a seventh rounder becomes a starter for your team. So we got a couple of years of starting punter. Sure, it was not a very good punter, but you got 2 years out of a starter with a seventh round pick. I don't think this is a redraft. That was a throwaway pick that you got a couple good years out of. You beat the odds with that seventh round pick. This is an investment. Now, if Torrey Taylor doesn't work out and you have to draft another punter or sign a big money punter, like, all right, that's firmly on you. The Trenton Gill one, that's a plus seventh round pick.
No, I'm in complete agreement with you.
And then the Bears' last draft pick, Austin Booker out of Kansas, 6'4.5", 240, ran a 4.79 40. From every account that I can see from like draft dudes, he's a second or third round draft pick projected. The Bears got him in the fifth. And the comp on him, Max Crosby.
Mm.
The defensive lineman or the defensive line coach that was there when they drafted Max Crosby, now the defensive line coach for the Bears. This dude has huge upside. He's long. He's explosive. He has really advanced pass rush moves for a guy. That guy only played 505 snaps of defense in college. That's nothing. That's like the lowest number of snaps of a draft pick that I've ever seen. And he's got a bull rush, a dip, a bend, a euro step, a swim move, a spin counter. That dude has every move. And it is, you know, he just hasn't played a lot. And if you watch him, the practices from the Senior Bowl, he went up one-on-one versus Jordan Morgan, the first round draft pick offensive tackle from the Packers. And he beat that dude like a rented mule. I mean, it wasn't like he beat him here or there. That dude just dominated him. And at one point just threw him into the quarterback. Like that dude, like almost every time destroyed Jordan Morgan. You know, the biggest knock on him is just, you know, not a lot of snap count. He's going to have to grow into that position in the NFL, but he's also, if you go running directly at him, you know, with pull a guard and come at him, you're going to swallow him up. He's not a big dude. He's tall, but he's not like a monster dude, but he's a speed to power dude. And this is by the end of the year, I think we're going to see him more and more, but this is a next year. This is our starter opposite Montez Sweat.
I like the upside. I really do. And the fact that you got him where you got him, I mean, not like you had to trade a massive haul for it, right? I mean, it's just you might have gotten some good value with what you got.
Yeah, he may not pan out, but I think it was a smart move and a good pick because, you know, you knew you needed to walk away with an edge rusher, and
you didn't overreach for one or trade valuable assets to get one.
Right. And so, I think it came up, you know, where he just fell into your laps. And I think at that point you're like, I can't not pick him. You know, it was that point where you're like, this is stupid. We're going to go get him. And you believe in your guy, you believe in your scouts, you believe in your coaching staff to teach him. And if this works out, this is going to be huge for Ryan Poles, is, you know, both of these picks, the Karan and the Austin, if they will, both of those work out and you end up with long-term left tackle and a long-term top tier edge rusher with fourth and fifth round or third and fifth round picks, that's an attestation of your skill as a scout and an evaluator and your coaching staff of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in like 17 undrafted free agents that didn't get drafted. And I don't want to talk about them all, but there's three that I kind of identified that are interesting. I don't know if they work out. They're just interesting. One is Johnny Newton, the stud defensive tackle from Illinois, his line mate, Keith Randolph.
That was cool to see the Bears sign an Illinois player for me personally.
Like, this dude is active. He's a hard worker. The issue I have with him is I didn't see him in the Bears front. I don't see him as an even front guy. I thought he would end up being a decent, like a five technique in an odd front, like in a 3-4, like that five technique. I thought that's where he would fit, but, you know, is he going to end up being a starter? No. If he pans out, I think he's just going to be a rotational guy, but, you know, mostly people picked him to be a sixth, seventh round pick, and you got him as an undrafted rookie. And I think there's nothing but upside with him. The other one is Brendan Bates, the tight end from Kentucky. If you remember, the Kentucky head coach was one of the people the Bears seriously considered bringing in as the offensive coordinator. So Kentucky runs a McVay style system. So Brendan Bates comes right in day one and knows the type of system that Shane Waldron's kind of going for with that McVay system. So it's not new to him. He's going to be able to step in, which he's more of a blocking guy, but, you know, knowing the system is huge. It's going to be a big boost for him in making this roster, and you need that third tight end. So he probably has the leg up there out of anybody. Austin Reed, the quarterback out of Western Kentucky. This dude in his 2 years as a starter, do you know how many yards he threw for in college in 2 years as a starter?
How many?
8,086 in two
seasons.
Pretty
good.
With 71 touchdowns to 22 interceptions. And this is the same system in school that gave us Bailey Zappi. So does he make this roster? Probably not. But, you know, as a guy in your practice squad, like maybe he becomes a serviceable backup. So I think a good pickup. And then my favorite of all of them, Theo Benedet from Canada. He is 6'7", 305 pounds, and his relative athletic score. So you look at him as an athlete compared to everybody else, his position, and it's out of 10. So if you're 10, you are the GOAT of athleticism for your position. He's a 9.03. He was expected to be one of the first, if not the first pick in the Canadian football draft, both last year, but he decided to go back to school. And then again this year, and he decided not to go in the Canadian draft. He went into the NFL and he's a Bear now. He's a big, giant, athletic dude. And he is super athletic and long. And I don't know how he's going to play, but I would love to see him work out with Olin Krutz this off season and let him get his hands on him. But Chris Morgan getting his hands on Theo Benedet, I'm hopeful that this could be probably 2 years down the road, but one of those guys you develop into a player.
So what you're saying is he said, who needs maple syrup when you have Chicago style hot dogs, when you got relish and mustard, right?
Essentially. Yeah. He's like, why do I need Tim Hortons when I've got Portillo's? I haven't really put the old roster together, as far as all of their draft picks and their, undrafted free agent class, which is not complete yet.
Yeah, you got to wait for that to happen first, right?
Yeah, but I'm just kind of seeing where, because I'm sure now is that next wave of free agency where there's guys that are sitting there like a Ryan Tannehill. Like a Ryan Tannehill is going to wind up with a job. It's just where, and people are waiting to see what their draft looks like. So maybe he goes to like a Denver where they drafted Bo Nix, but is he going to be a starter day one? I like Bo Nix. I just think he's got some work to do and that complicated Peyton system, and the rest of the quarterbacks that you have on that roster are bogus. Ben DiNucci and Zach Wilson. I think Ryan Tannehill probably makes some sense for them. Is he could start if Bo Nix is not ready, and he is not a path, a block for Bo Nix when he's ready to go. Whatever, Ryan Tannehill. So I don't think the Bears are going to go for that. I think they're confident with their three quarterbacks. And I didn't see anybody that really sparked my interest as far as veteran. I think they're going to go with Rippon, Tyson Bagent, and Caleb Williams.
Well, yeah. I mean, Tyson Bagent's going to be QB1. you know that, right?
Caleb Williams got to come in there and beat him out.
Caleb Williams in 8 years is going to raise the Lombardi trophy over his head and say, I think back to my days when I sat behind Tyson Bagent and I learned from him, just like Pat Mahomes sat behind Alex Smith and just like Aaron Rodgers sat behind Brett Favre, I sat behind Tyson Bagent.
I love Tyson Bagent, and I wish you could put Tyson Bagent in like Jeff George or Jay Cutler's body, because you would have a Hall of Fame level quarterback. I think he's really smart and he's competitive. He knows the system. He knows what he's supposed to be doing. I just think his body isn't just not, like he's not gonna, he just doesn't have the arm to be the dude.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. Jay Cutler had one of the strongest arms you'll ever see as an NFL quarterback. If you put that on Tyson Bagent, because Tyson Bagent, he's sneaky athletic too.
Yeah.
Like you saw some of those plays he made. And like you said, I think he's a smart dude. It's just some of those picks that he threw, it's like he just didn't have that arm strength to get it there. So I definitely agree with you on that. But, it's QB1. It's not actually going to be Tyson Bagent, nor is it going to be Andy Dalton. It's going to be Caleb Williams.
Yeah. One veteran free agent that I would love the Bears to bring in, is he was on the Bears last year, Mercedes Lewis. I think
I was just going to bring him up.
I want him back. I think having that veteran in there is good for Caleb Williams. It's good for that team that he's still got something in the tank. You're not relying on him. You don't need him to do anything other than doing what he does, is be an exceptional blocker. And if you need him to break off that block and catch a 1 yard touchdown pass, he can do it. And he is inexpensive, and he is just an absolute dude to have in your locker room. And I'm in the camp of, I would bring Mercedes Lewis back until either he just decides he doesn't want to play anymore, or you have to drag his corpse out there like Weekend at Bernie's. If that dude can still run and he still wants to play football, I would have him on the team. I love him, and I love the attitude he brings. He is selfless. He knows what he is in this, you know, where he is in this life and in his NFL career, and he's happy. He's not complaining, and he just does what he's asked to do. I love that. Edge, I'm curious of what they'll do. I don't want Yannick Ngakoue back. I thought he just played poorly for the Bears. Even after
he got hurt, yeah, you know, just didn't work.
Even after they got Montez Sweat, you would expect him to pick up his productivity, and he didn't. You know, there's Calais Campbell, who's 400 years old, but still somehow productive. Carl Lawson, Bud Dupree. These are guys that are probably situational pass rushers, but maybe until you get Austin Booker to where he needs to be. You know, there's some veteran offensive linemen like Mekhi Becton and Dalton Risner that could be swing guys that are veterans. One guy I would love to have, I just don't know where he's at with his health, is Connor Williams. That dude would have been offensive center, number one, big money dude. He tore his ACL literally Kyler Murray tore his ACL on December 12th, the year before. Connor Williams tore his December 11th of last year. So it's like basically 1 year apart. So you kind of use that as a gauge of, all right, well, it was like October when Kyler Murray was able to like resume practice, and I think November is when he came back to games. So you're like, do you want to bring him in for the last 6-7 games if he's, that's the path that he's on? But I think that's an option should Ryan Bates fail.
I agree.
And I'm gonna throw a name out there, and you're not gonna like it. You're not gonna like it. For depth at the safety position, because he's not starting, Adrian Amos.
I don't hate it. I'm not giddy for it, but I don't hate it.
Yeah, I want to, you know, I'm looking at the roster. I think you're probably okay. Your defensive tackle rotation, I would like an edge rusher, that a veteran edge rusher to come in. I would like one or two veteran offensive linemen to come in, and I would like a veteran safety to come in, because I don't like your safety depth.
Yeah, depth, I mean, good. Yeah,
your safety depth is no bueno.
It's lacking. It is, and I mean,
if your starters stay healthy the whole season, I like the starters a lot.
Well, so do I, but you can't always, I mean, it's hard to rely on that.
Yeah, it is the depth I don't like at safety. So I think Ryan Poles can really bulletproof this lineup with a little bit of money, not even a lot. And these are like $1 to $3 million a year guys, and you just need
right.
A couple
and
of them.
And you're signing them to 1 year. You know, these aren't long term commitments you're talking about.
Yeah, and you don't even have to keep them on your roster if somebody younger and on a rookie deal comes in and just blows you away in training camp, it's a safety net for you going into training camp. Because, you know, if you're relying on like Karan Amageji to be like, oh yeah, he's going to be our swing tackle. What if he's not ready? Like, what if you're like, ah, he's still a little green, and you put him in, you don't want him to get Caleb Williams killed.
Right. And especially because I think he is going to need some work.
Yeah, but he's a guy, it's weird. He's one of those tough guys is you can't put him on the practice squad. Somebody's going to take him, but you don't, it's hard to keep him on the roster because, he's, you know, is he ready to contribute? So he's one of those guys. I don't think he's going to dress very often. He's like that bottom of the roster. And, you know, while he's learning, and, guys like him, I think, are the reason that the NFL roster should be expanded a little bit, or the rules on the practice squad change where it makes it a little harder for somebody to steal a player. Because guys like that, where you're like, man, he just needs some time. We just don't, it's hard to give time to a guy in the NFL.
Get this. Here's an idea for an NFL roster. How many guys are on a current roster right now?
53, and then I think practice squad is 10.
Right. So 53 guys. What if you had 55? And what you were able to do with two more is have a player of your choosing, one for defense, one for offense. It doesn't have to be a specific position. So if your defensive player is an extra safety, you can have it an extra safety. If it's an extra linebacker or lineman, then you can have that. Same thing with offense. Whether it's an extra wide receiver, an extra lineman, an extra tight end, whatever. Extra running back. You get two slots, one for an extra defensive, one for an extra offensive, and they're not on the split squad, they're on the roster, but you're able to have that.
Yeah, or be able to designate X number of guys from your practice squad that can't be taken.
Oh, that too. I mean, like, you know, kind of like a Rule 5 protection type deal, but
yeah,
I wouldn't mind that either.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that like he gets a phantom injury and he's out for the season from training camp. You're like, oh, what happened? Oh, he had like turf toe. He's out for the season though. And then he just spends that whole, you can't take him. He doesn't count towards, you know, nobody can take him because he's uninjured, but he doesn't take up a roster spot and he gets the whole year to work out. The Bears have been known to do that in the past.
Yeah, they have.
But you know, I just would like to see a veteran come in and be able to come in like a Mekhi Becton. Like, was he great last year for the Jets? Obviously not, but is he a veteran that can play at a fairly high level? Yeah, and he's not going to get paid that much, but he can come in and just step in without you know, too much issue. But we'll see. I think in the next week or two, we'll probably start seeing more of the this next wave of free agency. And you know, by the time we have mini camps, I would hope the Bears would have that other edge rusher be solidified. And I don't love the idea of bringing in like a Calais Campbell who's 400 years old, but if that dude can still play at a high level and you're just putting him in situationally, you know, like 15, 20% of the snaps, it is what it is.
Yep.
There's one more Bears thing I want to say is I feel like there's no way the Bears are not going to be the Hard Knocks team this year.
I think you're right. It seems inevitable.
They're a team on the rise. They drafted a very personable number one overall quarterback to lead this team. And they're a big market team. I don't see anybody that's last year. The Jets made sense because the Bears were one of the eligible teams, but I was like, the Jets make too much sense because it's a New York team. They love New York teams and they just brought in Aaron Rodgers. Like that's going to be the team. Like, but this year you're like, who else makes sense?
I mean, it's like all the roads point to it. It really does.
Especially
with this Roma Dunze, Caleb Williams relationship. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it just makes so much sense. And I'm pulling up now, eligible for Hard Knocks 2024. The Bears, Broncos, and Saints are the only teams that can be forced to do it. Any team can volunteer, but the Bears, Broncos, and Saints can be forced. And do the Broncos and Saints seem at all appealing?
Not really.
The Broncos, it's the Sean Payton thing, but you know, what are you going to talk about? Maybe if Russell Wilson was still there, but you got Bo Nix, who I like. Bo Nix, I like him better than I like most of the quarterbacks in this draft outside of like Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. Like, I like him a lot, but he's not a guy that you're like must see TV. And the Saints, I don't know what's their angle. What makes them interesting? They're a mid team. They're not terrible, but they're not good. And they're going to get boat raced. As long as Kirk Cousins is healthy this year, they're going to get boat raced in their division.
That division's bleh.
So, yeah, I just all signs point to the Bears, unless there's an interesting team. Like, unless the Cowboys were like, we want it. And then the NFL is just going to give it to the Cowboys because, but I just think it's Bears.
Yeah. I think the chances are likely. There's another Bears topic we should discuss though.
Oh, what did I forget?
The day before. You saw what happened the day before.
Oh yeah. It's already out of my mind. How did I forget about this? Yeah. Let's say a hymn. Let's bring our pastor in here to say a hymn and pray for us to get a new stadium.
Well, here's the problem. I'm not a billionaire. I'm just a low life that doesn't have billions of dollars, that isn't asking for public money. So sorry. Can't say a prayer for me, I guess. That was just so
like, all right. Did the stadium look cool? Yeah.
Of course it did. The renderings always look good for this kind of thing.
Yeah, the park where you have the column A from the Soldier Field there, and like, okay, this looks neat. But it never looks like the render in real life. It just doesn't.
No, and it doesn't really cover up the logistical questions that you have. You know, everyone and their mother was asking about parking. You know, are you going to make it more accessible for public transportation like buses and, you know, CTA, the L, the train, whatever? And, you know, people brought this point up too, and I think it's valid, is it looks great in the spring, summer, early fall, but all that space you have for parks and the happy kids, we're going to be playing in those parks in December when it's 10 degrees outside and the wind's coming off the lake?
Nope.
I mean, if you were in Arlington Heights, a lot of that space would probably be restaurants, bars, shops, hotels, a casino, perhaps.
I mean, I still see logistic issues with Arlington Heights that would need to be worked out.
Well, of course there will be.
Is, you know, all those same expansion of roads and expressway infrastructure needs to be solved, because if you've ever gone to a big horse race when the track was still there and you try to leave at a horse race, which is a fraction of an NFL game. It's a nightmare. It was a nightmare getting out of there. And, you know, for all the, oh, they've got a CTA or a metro stop right there. I'm like, well, if you're not coming from Crystal Lake or from downtown Chicago, like that, it's not, it's, you know, there's hub and spoke. It is a spoke stop. It's not a hub. So if you're coming from Joliet or Naperville or, you know, Northwest Indiana, like you can't take a train there. I mean, unless you take two trains, you have to take a train into downtown, and then the stars have to align for the next train that goes out to Arlington Heights. And then when you go home, it's Arlington Heights train to downtown. Stars have to align. You could be waiting there a while because it's Sunday late afternoon, and then take your second train home. Like, nobody's going to want to do that. Like, sure, there's going to be a ton of room for parking. That's easy. But, you know, there's issues there too. And what made me upset about the proposal is they glossed over some things that they tried to make sound better. They're like, okay, you know, we're putting in $2 billion. NFL is going to put in $300 million. And we need $900 million from from the taxpayers. It's not even the taxpayers. It's coming from that hotel tax that's already there. So it's not increasing taxes. It's, but then you're like, okay, we need another $2.5 billion to do the rest of it, like the park and the expansion of roads. And where is that coming from? Nobody has an answer for that one.
Yeah, so nobody. Yeah.
Without that, those parts, this stadium is another major issue. You need all of those parts need to come together to make this a world-class facility. And that is a benefit to people. Like, but where are you getting that other $2.5 billion?
Yeah. And the Brandon Johnson pulling the, George Walker Bush, read my lips, no new taxes with the Chicago. I don't buy that.
I tweeted out like the picture of George Bush with that, and then I put like the Michael Scott with the Wayne Gretzky, miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Wayne Gretzky, Michael Scott. I put that with George Bush, and then I just put a Brandon Johnson.
That is funny.
It's like, it's, you know, for that nine, for the actual stadium and the main part of the project. Okay, I get it. No new taxes. No increase in existing taxes. That is coming from that 2% hotel tax. All right. I'm with you. I'm with you on there, and I'm fine. You can have that. That can be, you know, that's going towards that anyway. It's not coming out of my pocket. It's coming from people, you know, tourists and people here for work and people here for conferences and whatnot. That's fine. Okay, but then the expansion of the roads, the building of the park, this is going to look like a dumpster. Like, what is tearing down of Soldier Field part of that original money, or is that part of the $2.5 billion? Because if part of the, you know, you need a bunch of money to tear down Soldier Field, like, what, are you gonna have two stadiums sitting there forever until you find the money?
Right, exactly. They didn't answer that at all.
No.
What are you going to play in Champaign again?
Yeah. And that's why, that is the reason why Governor Pritzker was like, I see flaws in this. And because that's what he's seeing. You know, the first part, the actual building of the stadium, okay. Like, we're all good to that point. It was, I actually had to go back and try to rewatch it, but then they took it down. They took the press conference. It was live. You couldn't access it afterwards. And I was like, oh, this sucks. So I had to find people posting clips to, oh God, the Cubs are about to lose this game.
Yeah. I already turned it off.
It's, they're tied 4-4 in the ninth. And now, but there's runners on first and third with no outs.
Yeah. That's over.
Yeah. God. But nobody had an answer for where's this money's coming from. It's mind boggling. Like, how did you wave your hands? Like, what, what made them think that people weren't going to ask these questions?
No, but you gotta put a lot of fluff into it. You gotta say, like, oh, just like our 85 Bears and Ditka and blah, 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 and all that bull crap. By the way, I'd like to point out Kevin Warren saying, well, we gotta stay in this campus area because we've been here for a century. You played at Wrigley Field for half a century.
Yeah.
Yep. Come on.
Facts. I mean, is Kevin Warren a showman and a politician, and you see why they brought him in? Like, he is everything Sweaty Teddy was not. Like, I get it. Like, that guy is charismatic. He came in there and hand waving and like, but at the end of the day, like, if you can't figure out that other $2.5 billion, like, I hard stop. Because that you need that expansion for the roads, because going in and out of there, you know, is a nightmare. I agree. I mean, and I take the L when I go down there, but you know what a terrible walk that is? It's not that like it's that far, but there's no infrastructure for, like, you're walking on just regular sidewalks.
Right. You're kind of going up and down through, and it's just annoying.
And walking on the sidewalks, there's like tens of thousands of people all doing the same thing at the same time. So you're like sardines, and you're walking like slow pace. You can't walk at your own pace because there's people in front of you, and you can't walk in the street because people are driving on the street. So it's, oh God, Dansby Swanson dropped a pop-up. Game over.
What?
Dansby, I mean, it was like a blooper, but he hit him in the glove and he dropped it, and the runner from third scored. But yeah, I mean, it's this, I think, was a rushed plan. And I liked the way it looked. And the other thing I have a problem with is, why isn't it bigger? Why isn't it, like, capacity wise?
I think a lot of people had that question. Well, they had to make that whole window area to see the city.
So it would put you, let's see, where's the list? Some bias capacity. So right now you're the smallest at 61.5. And wasn't this like, wasn't it 66,000? 68? Either way, let's see. You're the smallest now at 61.5. Next is Arizona, 63.4. Allegiant is 65. Commander's Field is 65. But that's going to be they're going to build a new stadium at some point. There's a dump. Ford Field is 65. Hard Rock in Miami is 65,326. Paycor in Cincinnati is 65,515. Minneapolis is 66,655. Gillette is 66,829. Lucas Oil is 67. Cleveland is 67,431. So, like, let's go from the top. MetLife in New York, 82,500. Lambeau is 81,441. AT&T Stadium in Arlington is 80,000. Arrowhead is 76,416. Denver, 76,125. Charlotte, 74,86. Why isn't it at least 70,000? Put you in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. It will put you 13th. Okay. I mean, I think you're the Bears. You should have a top 10 in capacity. Should be 72,000. I think that's the fact that you're not seems stupid.
Well, we've wanted a bigger stadium. We've wanted to host all these events, which they seem to have their eyes on doing. But yeah, it doesn't sound like it's going to be that much bigger with this plan.
No, it's a couple thousand bigger. You're still one of the smaller stadiums. And you're on par with like you're on par with Foxborough, which, you know, you're like, oh, it's the Boston area, but it's actually pretty far outside of Boston. It's Foxborough. Do Boston. It's 36 miles outside, or 30 miles outside of Boston. So it's a hike outside of Boston. You know, but I don't know. Dumb. We'll see what happens. We'll see when shovels go in the ground.
Did you hear the interview with the Arlington Heights mayor on 670 The Score last week?
No.
Well, he was talking, and I mean, you know, they're still saying they're interested if Kevin Warren ends up coming back to them. So obviously, they still own the land. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but there is a small part of me that thinks that maybe this will still end up going there because the Friends of the Lakefront, or whatever that association is called, they are not having this proposal.
I haven't heard anything from any of them, but
They said something publicly, I think, and I don't think they're in on it.
probably not. They're not in on anything. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, is this all a playing each other? I have no idea. I mean, if you were trying to play Chicago to get money from Arlington Heights, then, you know, why is Brandon Johnson in on this? Is it him trying to save face that, oh, hey, we gave it our all and I had it in our hands and, you know, I have no idea. And Arlington Heights could have just had this all. They played this so dumb. Like, if they would have ponied up and, you know, this could have already been started. You know, I would love the stadium in Chicago on the lakefront. I'm still pro that. But from a building standpoint, it would be way better for me if they built it in Arlington Heights. You're not having all of the traffic issues of blocking Lakeshore Drive. Like, you've got 326 acres to put stuff and move stuff around and do what you need to do. Plus, it's in Arlington Heights. I don't experience any of it. It's out of sight, out of mind. I'm gonna experience all the traffic nightmares and the construction issues and the cranes and all that on the lakefront. That's gonna impact me.
Right.
So this is long from being done, I believe. And I think Kevin Warren's trying to already put that. The longer every year it takes, it's another 150 million. Okay, well, that's got to come out of your pocket, bro.
Yeah, we'll see how quickly this gets figured out.
Right, should we talk a little baseball here?
I guess.
White Sox, 3 wins in a row.
So, did you have getting swept by the Twins but sweeping the Tampa Bay Rays on your bingo card?
I did not.
Neither did I.
I did not. It just it puts into perspective where Tampa Bay is as an organization. I think they're bad. And
Yeah, they're banged up. They're not looking good.
that money,
But hey, the White Sox took advantage of it.
yeah, that money ball thing that they've done, where they've just, you know, not paid players and they've developed and they've brought guys in. Like, it has been pretty good up to this point. But at some point in baseball, if you don't pay, you can't keep that up. It didn't work out in Oakland. It at some point it fails. You know, just ponying up and paying everybody doesn't always work either, but you have to be able to develop and you have to be able to pay people, and Tampa just hasn't paid people, and I think it's finally catching up with them. You know,
Also, your superstar being a pedophile doesn't help.
yeah, that doesn't help either. you know, but the White Sox took advantage and they won those games. And, you know, they're still not a good team, but they're out of the, you know, that absolute, you know, hell that was 8-game losing streaks and things. You at least hang your hat on some victories.
Yeah, for sure.
They're still like 9 games out of behind Minnesota for last place. But Tampa would be last if the White Sox and Tampa switch divisions. Tampa would be in last place in the AL Central. So that's that. And the Cubs, man, they can't catch a break.
The injuries.
The injuries are brutal. Absolutely brutal. And
Jordan Wicks now is the latest victim after Cody Bellinger last week with Say Suzuki. You already lost your ace. Jameson Taillon lost time. I mean, Julie Merriweather. It's ridiculous. And then today you have the game end on that bullshit. It just, ugh.
I mean, you know, Morel, you know, we lucked out. Morel didn't get injured, but today he fouled one off his foot and the trainer had to come out. It's like, how much longer before he's on the 10 day with some sort of contusion or whatever. It's absolutely ridiculous. And the Jordan Wicks, you're like, okay, that sucks. But you're like, okay, well, at least Steele is coming back soon. But this, it's tough to keep playing well with all these injuries. And the crazy part is they've still got a good record. They're still only like half game out of first.
I don't know. Yeah, and everybody lost today, so.
Yeah, they are half game out of first. And, you know, everybody else is losing. St. Louis is bogus. Pittsburgh, remember, they were Pittsburgh. Cincinnati's okay, but I just still think they're not a real team. Milwaukee's, I think, is just going to – eventually they're going to realize that they're not good either. And they're gonna start losing. I think it's the Cubs division to win. But
these injuries, it's just making it harder and harder.
Craig Counsell has earned his money already. We're like not even 30 games into the season, and he's already had to manage the hell out of things. You know, we've got a brutal, brutal bullpen, crazy injuries, tough schedule, and still a half game out of first.
Yeah, it's not going to get easy though, because don't we have to play the Braves twice soon?
Yep. But we have a better record than the Dodgers, better than anybody in the NL West, better than any team in the NL Central except one. The NL East is good. The Atlanta and Philadelphia are real good.
Yeah.
But you
I'm
would be
not
first,
looking forward to playing Atlanta.
You'd be first place in the AL East, second place in the AL Central. And the AL East is real good. Baltimore's real good. New York is pretty darn good. It's, and then this was a tough series with the Red Sox. You know, you take the first game, and to you got absolutely just boat raced in the second game with them.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you were kind of due for an ass whooping, so whatever. I didn't really think twice about that. Half the Red Sox runs came when frickin' Matt Mervis and Patrick Wisdom were on the mound. So, you know, just, you know, today's loss was more frustrating because it just felt like you didn't get the breaks. And even though you didn't get the breaks, you still tied it and brought it to the ninth inning with a chance to go to extras.
Yeah, this game was frustrating because you felt like you'd not go in your night and you're not going to do anything. And then suddenly you know, through just some luck and some timely luck and a few good hits, you're like, okay, we just tied this up. And you're like, okay, I'm feeling good. And then the way you blow it in the ninth, it's like, all right, it's over. Like when going into the ninth, I just knew that they were going to lose because it just felt like it. And, you know, single and a double, and then Dansby Swanson. I mean, it was a tough play, and there would have been a play at the plate anyway had he caught it.
He would have tagged up. He would have tagged up.
But, I mean, from that shallow outfield, I think Swanson could have thrown him out, but it would have been a play. But you got to catch that. Step one, you got to catch it. When it falls, it's over.
Yeah, just that kind of night.
Tough night. And it's the Cubs schedule here. Cubs schedule.
It just like, you know, you pulled out that sweep against the Astros and you saw Pico Armstrong with his first hit, a go-ahead home run. That four-game winning streak had so many good vibes in it. You just don't want to lose it with all these injuries. And, you know, obviously, it's challenging for anybody that has to deal with injuries like this. But one thing that I really liked, which is such a bummer with Jordan Wicks, his last start against the Astros, that was as good as he's looked this year.
Yeah.
Hopefully, it's two games in, but I hope that's a sign that Tyone is going to keep pitching well because he's looked really good so far himself.
Yeah, I mean, him and Shota.
Yeah, Shota's awesome. He is awesome. He dominated the Red Sox the other night. That was a work of art. And him and Tyone have been giving you innings.
Yep. All right, so we got a four-game set against the Mets in New York. Then we come home for three against Milwaukee. And then three at home versus the Padres. Then we go to Pittsburgh for three. Before we go to Atlanta. That Milwaukee series is going to be big. Is the winner of that series probably is the, you know, winning or leading this division at that point.
It's just like, your two breaks have been the Marlins and the Rockies, but kind of gone through this buzzsaw. And, you know, you're going to New York where the Mets are mediocre right now, but I wouldn't take them overly lightly.
No, I mean, they're not like last year's team where they were just a joke.
But they're beatable.
I mean, they're better record wise. They're better away than they are at home. They're 7-8 at home, but they're above 500 team. So it's not like they're a joke this year. It's just, but you got to go in there and you got to beat them. And four game series are tough because it's real easy to just split those two and two. We saw that with the Marlins. It's real easy to end up being 2-2. Let's see if we know the probable pitchers for that series. Tomorrow is Tyone versus Luis Severino. That's a good matchup. Tuesday is Assad versus Minaya. It's another good matchup. Why can't we get some back end scrub guy? Those are the Cubs. The guys the Cubs can't hit anyway. And then Wednesday, game three is Shota versus Buto. And the finale is Ben Brown versus Adrian Hauser. Adrian Hauser is 0-3 with an 8.37 ERA, which means he's going to throw a no-hitter.
Of course.
Was there anything else you want to talk about?
Nope, I think I've said my piece.
I think we can, next week we can talk about
You get
the,
more, yeah.
You know, a little more Bears in depth, and you know, get ready for mini camp, and then we could talk about the NHL lottery, draft lottery, because
Yeah, that's right. That's coming up.
That's coming up on next week. Not this coming week, but the week after. Crazy. Crazy, crazy. I'm hoping number one, get my foam finger out.
All right, let's do it again.
One last thing about the Bears before we sign off here is, do you know how hard it has been to not order a Caleb Williams jersey? I've done it, though. It's been for the team because I know if I buy one, he's going to stink. I'm not buying one.
Yeah, I'm not either. I'm superstitious like that.
Yeah. I was on the website. He's going to be number 18. Look at this. He's going to take Kyle Orton's number. But I already saw somebody on Facebook or on Twitter that is selling nameplates to cover up the number one jersey for Justin Fields with Jalen Johnson.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So you can repurpose your jersey.
Hey, it's better than getting a whole new one, right?
Yeah, I mean, Jalen Johnson going to number one, that makes it easier. And anybody that's got a Kyle Orton jersey still, that can they can repurpose that.
Yeah, exactly. Kyle Orton's old number. That's much easier. All you have to change is the nameplate.
Yeah, change the nameplate. So, yeah, I've done this for you, Bears fans. I have not bought. I when Justin Fields was drafted, like he was probably still on the phone with the Bears when I ordered that stupid jersey. And I'm not doing it. I was on the site. I was looking at him. I was like, whew. And I didn't. I held strong. I had the pastor from the Bears press conference say a little prayer for me.
I certainly will.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends, how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Win. What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears 31... the -7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down, I wanna.